Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
97.1 FM Talk.
On-demand audio.
Before the announcement of Supreme Court Justice Stephen Breyer's retirement, we were waiting to hear from Secretary of State Antony Blinken. And he has been speaking from the State Department this morning regarding the situation that's taking place in Ukraine. So since the retirement of the Supreme Court justice situation is sucking up the news everywhere else, and this is going to be something that we're going to be talking about for a long time, nothing is taking, like, we're not going to have this replaced by the end of the day, as you know. There will be lots of you know, pulling hair out and shrieking and all of that stuff. Plenty of time to do that. We have a situation in Ukraine with Russia. We have a president who's bumbled this in the public, who's in some cases arguably emboldened President Putin to take measures that are not to the benefit of Ukraine and people who love freedom. So let's listen in real quick to the State Department and hear what Secretary Blinken said.
Last week in Geneva, Russian Foreign Minister Lavrov and I met to discuss the crisis instigated by Russia's military buildup on Ukraine's borders and steps to de-escalate tensions and pursue diplomacy. Russia had previously outlined its concerns and proposals in writing, and last week I told Foreign Minister Lavrov that the United States would do the same. Today, Ambassador Sullivan delivered our written response in Moscow. All told, it sets out a serious diplomatic path forward, should Russia choose it. The document we've delivered includes concerns of the United States and our allies and partners about Russia's actions that undermine security, a principled and pragmatic evaluation of the concerns that Russia has raised, and our own proposals for areas where we may be able to find common ground. We make clear that there are core principles that we are committed to uphold and defend, including Ukraine's sovereignty and territorial integrity, and the right of states to choose their own security arrangements and alliances. We've addressed the possibility of reciprocal transparency measures regarding force posture in Ukraine, as well as measures to increase confidence regarding military exercises and maneuvers in Europe. And we address other areas where we see potential for progress, including arms control related to missiles in Europe, our interest in a follow-on agreement to the New START treaty that covers all nuclear weapons, and ways to increase transparency and stability. We put these ideas forward because they have the potential, if negotiated in good faith, to enhance our security and that of our allies and partners, while also addressing Russia's stated concerns through reciprocal commitments. Our response to Russia reflects what I said in Kyiv, Berlin, and Geneva last week. We're open to dialogue. We prefer diplomacy. And we're prepared to move forward where there is the possibility of communication and cooperation if Russia de-escalates its aggression toward Ukraine, stops the inflammatory rhetoric, and approaches discussions about the future of security in Europe in a spirit of reciprocity. Our responses were fully coordinated with Ukraine and our European allies and partners, with whom we've been consulting continuously for weeks. We sought their input and incorporated it into the final version delivered to Moscow. Additionally, NATO developed and will deliver to Moscow its own paper with ideas and concerns about collective security in Europe, and that paper fully reinforces ours and vice versa. There's no daylight among the United States and our allies and partners on these matters. We shared our response paper with Congress, and I'll be briefing congressional leaders on this later today and consulting with them on our approach. As you know, There's strong bipartisan interest and deep expertise on the Hill when it comes to Ukraine and Russia, and we very much appreciate having Congress as a partner as we move forward. We're not releasing the document publicly because we think that diplomacy has the best chance to succeed if we provide space for confidential talks. We hope and expect that Russia will have the same view and will take our proposal seriously. I expect to speak to Foreign Minister Lavrov in the coming days after Moscow has had a chance to read the paper and is ready to discuss next steps. There should be no doubt about our seriousness of purpose when it comes to diplomacy, and we're acting with equal focus and force to bolster Ukraine's defenses and prepare a swift, united response to further Russian aggression. Three deliveries of U.S. defensive military assistance arrive in Kyiv this week, carrying additional Javelin missiles and other anti-armor systems, 283 tons of ammunition and non-lethal equipment essential to Ukraine's frontline defenders. More deliveries are expected in the days to come. We provided more defensive security assistance to Ukraine in the past year than in any previous year. Last week, I authorized U.S. allies, including Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania, to provide U.S.-origin military equipment from their inventories for use by Ukraine. Also last week, we notified Congress of our intent to deliver to Ukraine the Mi-17 helicopters currently held in Defense Department inventories, five of them. Additionally, the Secretary of Defense announced on Monday that 8,500 U.S. service members currently stationed in Europe and the United States have been placed in heightened readiness to deploy, to ensure that we're able to support the NATO response force swiftly if it's activated by the North Atlantic Council to harden the Allies' eastern flank. Other NATO allies have also announced steps that they're prepared to take, and we expect more in the coming days. We've taken this step out of prudence. We hope those forces don't have to be activated for deployment, but if they are, we will be ready. We're also continuing to coordinate with our European allies and partners on severe economic sanctions to hold Moscow accountable for its actions. We've developed a high-impact, quick-action response that would inflict significant costs on the Russian economy and financial system. As part of our response, we're also prepared to impose export controls that will have a longer-term effect, denying Russia products that it needs to fulfill its strategic ambitions. On top of all of that, our allies and partners are also stepping up to provide assistance to Ukraine in various and mutually reinforcing ways. As we've done many times before, the alliance and individual allies are coming together to support our partners and to defend what should be inviolable principles that have helped provide unprecedented security, stability, and prosperity for decades in Europe and around the world. Finally, we're looking to support our allies and partners in dealing with the secondary negative consequences of Russia's destabilizing acts. For example, we know that Ukraine's economy and financial position is being affected by this crisis. And just as we're bolstering Ukraine's security, so too are we looking for how we can support its economy beyond the significant assistance we're already provided. Our European allies and partners are doing so as well. And that's another matter that I'll have an opportunity to discuss with Congress later this afternoon. As we're taking steps to ensure that the global energy supply isn't disrupted, that too is an important focus. Should Russia choose to weaponize its natural gas by cutting supply to Europe even more than it's already done? We're in discussions with governments and major producers around the world about surging their capacity. We're engaged in detailed conversations with our allies and partners about coordinating our response, including how best to deploy their existing energy stockpiles. All this effort is aimed at mitigating price shocks and ensuring that people in the United States, Europe, and around the world have the energy they need, no matter what Russia decides to do. All told, our actions over the past week have sharpened the choice facing Russia now. We've laid out a diplomatic path. We've lined up steep consequences should Russia choose further aggression. We've stepped forward with more support for Ukraine's security and economy. And we and our allies and partners are united across the board. Now, we'll continue to press forward and prepare. It remains up to Russia to decide how to respond. We're ready either way. One final note before I take some questions. Regarding American citizens in Ukraine, as you know, earlier this week, I authorized the voluntary departure of a limited number of U.S. employees and ordered the departure of many family members of embassy personnel from Ukraine. This was a decision based on one factor only, the safety and security of our colleagues and their families. And given the continued massive buildup of Russian forces on Ukraine's borders, which has many indications of preparations for an invasion, these steps were the prudent ones to take. I want to be clear that our embassy in Kyiv will remain open, and we continue to maintain a robust presence to provide diplomatic, economic, and security support to Ukraine. The State Department has also issued an updated travel advisory due to the potential for security conditions to deteriorate rapidly and without warning if Russia invades or commits other destabilizing actions inside Ukraine. Our message now for any Americans in Ukraine is to strongly consider leaving using commercial or other privately available transportation options. These options remain readily available. And the embassy may extend loans to those who can't afford the cost of a commercial ticket. While the State Department will always seek to provide consular services wherever possible, Russian military action would severely impact our ability to perform that work. And if Russia invades, civilians, including Americans still in Ukraine, could be caught in a conflict zone between combatant forces. The U.S. government may not be in a position to aid individuals in these circumstances. This has long been the case in conflict zones around the world. So, while we don't know whether Russia will continue its aggression toward Ukraine, either way, we have a responsibility to provide this notice to Americans there. And with that, happy to take some questions.
Hi, thank you, Mr. Secretary. I realize that you don't want to get into the specifics of what is actually in this document, and although I'm sure I and my colleagues will continue to try to get them. But can you say, more broadly, when you say that there are core principles that you're committed to and to uphold and defend, does that mean that in this document you told the Russians point blank in writing that no is the answer to their demand for a formal bar on the expansion of NATO, the permanent exclusion of Ukraine, and the withdrawal of certain forces and equipment from Eastern Europe? Is that what this says? Is there anything different in this document than what we have heard publicly over the course of the last couple weeks?
Again, without going to the specifics of the document, I can tell you that it reiterates what we said publicly for many weeks and in a sense for many, many years, that we will uphold the principle of NATO's open door. And that's, as I've said repeatedly in recent weeks, a commitment that that we're bound to. And so the document, as I said, makes very clear some of the basic principles that we are standing by, committed to, and will uphold, much of which has been stated in public, including by me in recent days and weeks, and that goes to NATO's open-door policy.
So you would say that it is accurate to say that there are no concessions in this?
This isn't about concessions.
Well, there is no change in the U.S. and NATO position in this document.
First of all, there is no change. There will be no change. Second, we reiterate that principle. Of course, it is for NATO, not the United States unilaterally, to discuss the open door policy. These are decisions that NATO makes as an alliance, not the United States unilaterally. But from our perspective, I can't be more clear. NATO's door is open, remains open, and that is our commitment.
Thank you. Margaret.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary. Do you have any reason to believe, then, that the document that was submitted will in any way lessen the chance of Russian action, or was this just to show you tried?
Margaret, what we do in this document, besides laying out our core principles, besides sharing our concerns, the concerns of allies and partners, about things that Russia is doing that we believe undermine security and stability, we also do lay out areas where we believe that together we could actually advance security for everyone, including for Russia, based on some of its stated concerns, as well, of course, as for us and for our allies and partners. And so there are a number of areas, again, based on what Russia has said, that I think would make a difference if done on a reciprocal basis and approached in good faith. So, for example, as we've said, the placement of offensive missile systems in Ukraine, military exercises and maneuvers in Europe, potential arms control measures, greater transparency, various measures to reduce risks. All of these things would address, I think, mutual concerns, including concerns stated by Russia, and advance collective security. So I think there is there are important things to work with if Russia is serious about working with them. And that is up to President Putin. We'll see how they respond. But there's no doubt in my mind that if Russia were to approach this seriously and in a spirit of reciprocity, with the determination to enhance collective security for all of us, there are very positive things in this document that should be pursued.
Secretary of State Antony Blinken right there. The last sentence he just said there, he said if Russia is to approach this seriously and then essentially explain that if they're to consider the security of everybody involved, oh boy, we're in trouble, folks. That you've been listening to the Secretary of State Antony Blinken talking about the situation going on in Ukraine and what we have learned today. And I'll just talk to you briefly here before we go to a quick break. About the development that the United States has handed Russia written responses to demands. They want to keep it secret. I have my skepticism as to why they don't want the press and you to know what is in these documents. It says it's up to the Kremlin on how to proceed. From Fox News, they announced Wednesday that the United States has delivered written responses to demands made by Russia, saying it will be up to the Kremlin on how they proceed amid heightening tensions between Moscow and Ukraine. Russia has issued a list of demands in December, including a promise to not admit Ukraine as a member of NATO and to withdraw troops from the region, even as Russia continued to amass troops near the Ukraine border, increasing fears that Moscow will order an invasion of its neighbors. So this situation continues to escalate. The Secretary of State speaking today about the document, the handwritten document that was delivered in person by the ambassador to the officials there in Russia, in Moscow, as a response from the United States on these demands that Russia has made. Now, we'll cover this more as this unfolds throughout the show. It's been a busy news day.
Get more at 971talk.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode and catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.